Welcome to Upvote, a politics podcast from Wired Nas Technica UK. Each week until the election, we'll be discussing the increasingly important relationship between politics and technology, which more and more is coming to define 21st century life. I'm Roland Manthorpe, Associate Editor of Wired.
And I'm Kelly Fiveash, News Editor of Ars Technica.
We're recording this on Tuesday, 6th of May. We're in London. And it's been just a few short days since the terrorist attack, not far away in Borough Market and on London Bridge. We're not in a position to talk exactly about what happened, and I kind of feel that speculating about how this is going to play into the result would be insensitive and probably fairly meaningless. If you do want to know more about the roots of extremism and the global fight against it, then I'd really recommend listening to Upvote Episode 5, which has some heartbreaking and inspiring stories of people fighting power and prejudice across the world, from Syria to Zimbabwe to Norway. We recorded that the day of the Manchester terror attack, and I think it really lends some invaluable context to these awful events. Here, though, the general election is now 2 days away. The campaign resumed officially on Monday, although some might say it never really stopped. Definitely, it never stopped online. The algorithms were still pumping out those ads, especially for the Conservatives, who appear to be spending tons of money on Facebook. But as we won't know what worked until Friday, today we're going to look ahead until after the election, using the only guide we've got, a thin guide, which is the party's manifestos. To do that, we're joined by Jenny Tennyson, who's CEO of the Open Data Institute. Jenny, how have the manifestos and the campaign been for you?
Well, the manifestos have been interesting in some ways. There are some bold promises, particularly from the Conservatives, but in other ways, they're a real disappointment. I don't think that they really show the power of data and digital in achieving policy aims, and that's the place where we're disappointed.
We're going to hear later your pitch for what for a world that's powered by data, how things could and should be better. Can you give us a sneak preview?
I'll be talking about what kind of data infrastructure we need, the kinds of skills that we need to have to make best use of that, and how you need to really promote innovation, but also the real importance of trust and building trust in the use of data so that we can get the most out of it.
And if that doesn't interest you, then you're no one I know. Anyway, right, let's get into these manifestos. Okay, Kelly.
Yes.
Let's start it from the top. The top line differences between these documents.
Okay, yeah, so roughly, and obviously we're focusing on the three main parties because we have time constraints. But the Tories, I would say, is it's digital charter, internet regulation, and a push again for government to be digital by default. Then with the Labour Party, they're talking about a £250 billion investment in infrastructure, better use of technology. And then over to the Liberal Democrats, it's innovation such as artificial intelligence and a digital bill of rights.
And you've read them all. From
yes.
A reader's difference, one stands out, doesn't it? Because the Conservatives is essentially much thicker.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it would be because they've been in government for 7 years now. And so, of course, they've been working on these policies for some time. The other key point is that Theresa May called a snap election. But in fact, you know, the Tories have been already now for 2 years, they've been in government. So a lot of these policies were already in play.
Since the manifestos were published, people have reacted strongly to some of the policy ideas. I mean, obviously, we saw that with social care. And in terms of tech policy, the thing that really stood out was Theresa May's promise to regulate the internet more heavily. I think it's worth quoting exactly what she said, especially in the light of the London and Manchester attacks. She says, or the Conservatives say, "We do not believe there should be a safe space for terrorists to be able to communicate online or work to prevent them from having this capability." What does that mean? Because it sounds to me a bit like saying that pens are bad and that writing shouldn't be done with them.
Well, yeah, quite. I mean, you can look again at the manifesto because, like you say, a lot of this stuff was already there prior to these dreadful attacks taking place. And so the detail in there, you know, some of the things are there's a request, for example, for help to for smaller companies to build their capabilities. Again, what does that mean? We don't know. It's not clear. And then the Tories also say that they want to provide support for civil society organisations to promote alternative and counter narratives. And again, that feeds into hate speech online and things like that, which has been a very big issue during this election campaign. And finally, there's also a pledge in there to force internet firms to deliver on their commitment to develop technical tools to identify and remove terrorist propaganda. And then on top of that, we've had the Home Secretary, Amber Rudd, once again making somewhat incoherent noises about end-to-end encryption. On Sunday, following the attack, she said that the government wanted to help tech companies work with us, and this is me quoting her directly, to limit the amount of end-to-end encryption that otherwise terrorists can use to plot their devices.
What does that mean?
Well, I think the key thing is that this isn't new. You know, the claim, although it was whirled out again over the weekend, you know, the idea that internet firms give terrorists a safe space to hide isn't new. David Cameron said a similar thing in 2015. But what's changing now is the strength of that rhetoric, coupled with the fact that, again, the government already has powers under the Investigatory Powers Act to order firms to decrypt communications. Such enforcement action just hasn't happened yet. So the key takeaway appears to be that this may be about to change in light of the recent attacks if the Tories return to power.
Yeah, because basically they've got kind of much greater powers now to enforce this sort of thing, to actually make it happen, even though they've been making noises about this for a while.
I think one of the interesting things here is that they also say at the same time that they want to make the internet a safe place for us as citizens and consumers to use. And encryption, as you know, is one of the ways in which we make it a safe place for us and stop us from being being phished and from being having fraud perpetrated against us. So they seem to be at odds, these two points.
I agree. There's a real tension here because you've got one arm of the government saying that they're investing £1.9 billion into cybersecurity. And then we've also got this issue of, you know, we need to stop these terrorists using these communications. So which one is it? You know, it's almost like choose a lane.
And the basic effect of this, it seems almost certain, is that if you started cracking down on the internet, you'd push terrorists underground into darker corners where they'd be much harder to observe. So it's hard to see how this would work in practice. But it does seem to be a really, really strong political message anyway. I mean, it's interesting to see that the Daily Mail ran with a front page on this. I think it was soon after the Manchester attacks. They obviously think, I guess, there's something in this line politically. But I wanted to ask, there is another party, of course, who's got an interest in all this. What would Labour do on this area?
I mean, it would undoubtedly support the status quo on surveillance. You know, I mean, in terms of, again, when you look at the kind of things that Labour's been pledging, not just in the manifesto, but again, in the wake of these attacks and the kind of rhetoric that Corbyn is going for, he's very keen to talk about, you know, the judicial process, and that is a very key aspect of moving forward on surveillance, especially with the online world. But Labour is also the party that kind of brought in the Snoopers Charter, or at least rather it wasn't successful, but it certainly kept pushing for that. And also under Labour we had the Ripper legislation, which was so very difficult that the implementation of it really, it's proved so problematic that we've kind of got in this mess now, because the legislation just wasn't good enough.
But that was Blairite and Brownite Labour. Surely things are different now with Corbyn.
If you just look at the record, the Labour Party's record in terms of the recently passed Investigatory Powers Act, then in Parliament they largely voted with the government. They forced through a few kind of minor amendments, but largely they were there all the way on this particular bit of legislation.
Because a little while back Corbyn published a kind of digital manifesto. It's not all in the Labour manifesto right now.
It's not there at all, actually. So the whole point of that, this was last summer, which seems like a very long time ago now, but the Corbyn was basically saying we need to democratise the internet. And one of the key things he was pushing for was the idea of a digital citizen passport, which hints, critics would say, a kind of return to the draconian database state years of the previous Labour government.
The bit that I find interesting that government wants us to trust them with our data and the way in which they use our data. And maybe we'll talk a bit about the Digital Economy Act in those terms. And yet we know at the same time that they are using these laws in order to snoop on us, right? In order to gather more data about us that might be used in negative ways about us. So how you build trust with data is a big issue for governments, is a big issue for organisations of all kinds. And when you have these two kind of conflicting things going on, both the wanting to use more of our data for, they say, good, and using more of our data in order to identify terrorists. I mean, you can say that's good as well. But it forces this kind of conflict between should we really be trusting government with our data? And I think that that's one of the big challenges that government has as it tries to use data as a tool, as it tries to use it as a power for good, and it really needs to address.
You mentioned the Digital Economy Act. That is referenced in the Conservative manifesto, along with quite a few other policies that are really existing policies. We talked a bit about that in up for episode 2. Oh, do you remember? But that was back in the days when the big event was the fact that Boris Johnson had called Jeremy Corbyn, what was it?
Mugglewump. Yes, there you are.
Ah, halcyon days of yore. But Jenny, I mean, this is the big act. I mean, what do you make of this? And it's as a policy in both of its terms, in terms of implementation.
So the Digital Economy Act, the pieces that I'm really interested in the Digital Economy Act are the use of data for good, right, and sharing of data across government departments so that you can get a better picture about individuals and to provide them better services. That's one of the parts of the Digital Economy Act. The other bit that is good, I think, is the power that it gives for the statistical agencies, the Office of National Statistics, to access data in order to generate statistics, which we all benefit from, are a public good. So I think we can get hung up on some of the negative aspects, but we also ought to see that this is a place where we're trying to use data where the government's trying to use data as a way to move us forward, to create a public good, to help citizens. Now, I think that in order to continue to have the trust in government in the use of that data, there needs to be a lot more transparency about what they are actually doing. And that's the bit that we really critiqued around the Digital Economy Act, that there needs to be transparency about how data is being shared and what it's being used for, so that you can maintain the trust of the public in that.
And I mean, on that as well, I guess some of the things that you're talking about here is the data sharing provisions that are in the Digital Economy Act. And I mean, one of the big criticisms was the kind of lack of safeguards around that. And now that it's enacted, are you concerned?
So I think it all comes down to the implementation.
Absolutely.
Laws can be implemented in lots of different ways, and they can be implemented in very concerning ways and not so concerning ways. What we would continue to push for, like I say, is that transparency about the exact ways in which data sharing is going on. Who, what data is being passed from place to place? What are the safeguards that are in place? How is that security being maintained around that data? And I think, because if you don't have that, then it, like I say, trust goes. And once you have trust going, then you don't get to benefit from the good things that data can bring to us.
And do you get a sense from Labour, for example, and of course we've also got the Liberal Democrats and other parties are available too, if we have a Labour government, for example, then do you think that they would implement this piece of legislation in the same way, or kick it into long grass, or...
I think from what I have seen and spoken with Labour politicians about, they have a very strong sense of citizens' rights over the data that is held about citizens. Mm-hmm. And so consent would be a big thing for Labour in a way that maybe it isn't such a big thing for Conservatives.
And on the manifestos, I know Labour touches on it very briefly in terms of kind of data protection and then more explicitly, the Tories do the same in their manifesto. They, in fact, say that there'll be new rights to ensure that we are in control of our data. But obviously, this is something that would be a legal requirement in a year's time anyway under the EU's General Data Protection Regulation. So do you think it's a bit silly, really, for it to be written as a pledge?
It depends on how far they actually intend to go. Mm. So I would view GDPR as being the kind of baseline mm-hmm. that you could have for. Everybody is going to have to comply with GDPR because we want to continue to trade, at least in some ways, with mm-hmm. Europe, and want to be able to hold data here that is being used by European citizens. But there are things that you could do over and above that. So one of the things that I talk about is we talk a lot about the kind of negative consent, right, where we want to stop people from doing particular things with our data. But what about the positive consent, which is I want to have my data so I can do stuff with it. In sectors like banking, for example, then we have push towards open APIs so that people can get hold of their transaction data and then use that in third-party applications to get a better idea about their spending habits, etc., etc. So you could read some of that kind of new framing of what control is, encouraging that kind of activity, right? Encouraging the activity mm-hmm. where we can get more access to and get more power from our individual data. That would be a great extra step over and above what GDPR does.
In terms of the great British public, how much do they care about these issues, do you think? Obviously, we write for tech publications. Our readers hopefully are engaged with it by now. But do you think the message is getting out there?
So I can either view that. I can dilly-dally on
that.
I think.
Why not?
So my pragmatic head says, well, no, this is not the top of anybody's agenda, right? Apart from like mine and my close associates. But on the other hand, then some of the reports that we saw coming out over the past few weeks. So, for example, ICO's investigation into the Information Commissioner's Office mm-hmm. investigation into how political parties are targeting people with their adverts, mm-hmm. right? Or the DeepMind fiasco, if you like, mm-hmm. around the access to data by these big internet companies. Those are the kinds of things that have captured headlines, and they've been in newspapers. So people, presumably outside of our circles, do care about them. And the fact that that's not really, those things aren't really talked about or really addressed mm-hmm. or really gone into in these in the manifestos or in the discussions that we're having, I think is a bit of a letdown.
We're getting a little bit sidetracked from our goal of going through the manifestos.
Nah.
But seeing as we've mentioned DeepMind, what do you make of this? This is because for those who don't know, this is basically concerns the deal that DeepMind, maybe the world's leading artificial intelligence company, made with the Royal Free, a hospital in London, about sharing data. And there's been a lot. They've faced a lot of criticism over the nature of the deal. DeepMind are also, I think, pretty angry about the criticism that they've faced. I'm guessing that from calling it a fiasco, what is that from DeepMind, from the Royal Free, from the way it was handled, from the government? What's going on here?
So, I think it hasn't been handled well, and I think that DeepMind, if you look at the kind of reflections that they had about what they would learn from the episode,
because this was their first deal, wasn't it?
It was, and so there are a couple of things. I think one is being more open earlier on about what they were doing and why and what kind of access they had would have been a good thing to do. And when you have the facts kind of emerging in news headlines rather than through an engaged conversation with people who are affected, mm-hmm. then understandably that undermines trust in the organisations involved, even if they were doing stuff for the good reasons, which I think, like I say, making best use of data is a really good thing to do. The other aspect to that is the competition aspect. So to what extent are we handing over the sole rights to innovate with, do machine learning on, get more artificial intelligence around our data? as in the public data, how much are we handing those over to single organisations rather than making them available more widely for innovation, right?
Although this is the, sorry Kelly, I know you wanted to jump in. Although this is the nature of data, right? Is that once you get a lead, then you're able to improve your service that much more. More people are attracted to your service. I mean, doesn't the data economy create monopolies?
It can create monopolies, but having exclusive deals so that only one organisation can have access to that data certainly creates monopolies, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
so, I mean, it doesn't help.
I'd say that by definition, that would not help with stopping monopolies. But sorry, Kelly, you wanted to say...
I mean, that's a nice little segue back to the manifestos.
Thank you, keeping us on track.
I am trying to. And, you know, we've got the Tories, one of their pledges is a digital charter. So, you know, my interpretation is they're kind of wanting to wrap the internet in cotton wool to make it a safer online space in the world. But they're also kind of making fuzzy promises about doing good things to protect citizens' data. So does that help?
Well, it's right intentions, isn't it? And I think they have something as well about having a data use and ethics commission. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's one of the big challenges of our time, right? Mm-hmm. Is how do we get data used ethically? What does that look like? And nobody knows what the answer to that is, because we're right at the beginning of that journey. So at least having the conversation about what should ethical data use look like, and what should a digital charter look like in a way that actually protects us would be a good thing to do. What has to happen is that is a wide conversation, and an educated conversation, an informed conversation, not one that is driven by kind of fears and paranoia, I think.
Okay, and it takes us over to the Liberal Democrats as well, and in their manifesto they talk about a digital bill of rights. Mm. Do you think that's a similar kind of pledge? Do you think they're trying to go further with this? What does it all mean?
I have no... It's really hard to tell,
yeah,
isn't it?
You know,
the manifesto commitments can be very, very high level. And, of course, all of the detail is what really can turn it from something that is excellent to something that is dreadful. Mm-hmm. You just don't know until you get into the implementation, I think.
Here, so I've got a few Labour pledges. There's a digital ambassador to work with tech firms to promote Britain as a sexy place for investment. Mm-hmm. Universal superfast broadband, availability by 2020. Keeping kids safe online by ensuring that tech firms do more to tackle abuse for under 18s. An anti-bot clampdown on online ticket touts. And a cybersecurity charter for companies to work with the MOD. For me, this looks like kind of, I guess, like retail tech policies. The sort of things that might cut through to ordinary people. Is that kind of what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean, Labour doesn't appear to have given this that much attention, really. You know, they are going for the big ticket things like education, health and so on, you know. And obviously those are the key things that the electorate feels that, you know, the stuff that really gets them going. But obviously the digital world is now really important in terms of all of those issues. So it shouldn't really be left behind, and it probably should be front and centre. But then, of course, I would say that because I care about my readership, and this is the stuff that they want to hear every day. So what do you think, Jenny?
I think also what I would like to see is the use of digital and data as a tool in order to achieve the education policies, in order to achieve the health policies, in order to achieve the defence policies. And sometimes I think that we get pigeonholed into thinking that digital and data is only a matter for the digital economy and this small kind of tech cluster thing, when actually digital and data affects every aspect of our lives and should be affecting every aspect of our lives. It should be being used, digital and data should be being used as a tool in order to achieve the policies that we have in other sectors.
So the question has to be, is this the government's fault that we're not there yet? I mean, I find it very interesting that the Tories are again saying that they want to be digital by default. They're very clear about that in their manifesto, and it's a pledge, and yet they've been here for 7 years with very mixed results, really. I know they've had some successes, but it's limited at this point, I feel. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that I think one of the big challenges, and this is one that we all face, is getting the capacity and capability of real decision makers up to the point, not where they can code or manipulate data, because that's not what's important for them, but to the point where they understand how digital and data can be used as a tool in order to achieve those policy objectives. And that's an education aspect. That's something that we work on. It's something that Dot Everyone works on, for example, to try and get decision makers, not only in government but also actually in big business as well, to the state where they can make informed choices about the use of digital and data.
Yes, there's this weird disjunct, isn't there, between how important politicians say technology is, and they really do, I mean, both in public statements about how it's changing the nature of everything, and also when you meet them, they're fascinated by it. But then when it comes down to policy, the tech policy is this weird little corner that is treated, I guess, a bit like, I don't know, like energy policy, or, I mean, not even on that level, is it? It just doesn't seem to rise to the national consciousness.
It's really interesting as well, if you look at, for example, broadband infrastructure. The remit for that is with the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. And I guess, you know, kind of media, internet, yeah, okay, kind of, sure. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, should we now have a Ministry of Technology?
I would like to see the digital economy part being spread into BEIS, so the business energy and industrial strategy, where actually the digital economy unit used to sit for a little while. They have to work in concert with each other. We have to see digitization and the provision of data and data infrastructure as being an essential part of our industrial strategy to get to where we want to go. We've written about this in the response to the industrial strategy consultation, and it is obviously, but we need to see it as part of that infrastructure rather than seeing it as just a bolt-on, a thing to the side that only affects a small amount of people, because it's not that. Mm-hmm. It's something that affects all of us all the time.
Well, maybe we've come to the good point for your manifesto pitch, Jenny, because I know that...
Put you on the spot.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly. Because I know that one thing that the OGI basically advocates for is, on one hand, trying to protect data rights, but on the other hand, trying to project this vision of the sunlit uplands that we could reach through the use of data. So, having just referenced Churchill, please take it away. No. Sorry. The reason we're asking you this is because you put out a few manifesto pledges that I think really caught our eye. So, I mean, what would you like government to see government doing if you were in this new role of digital minister or something like that?
So the pieces that we talked about in the kind of manifesto commitments are around three key pillars which we think are really important, and then techniques for building trust, which we also, as I've been talking about, I think is really important so we get the best use of data. Three key pillars are infrastructure, skills and innovation. So we view data as being infrastructure in the same way as electricity is infrastructure, in the same way as roads are infrastructure. And we think that we should be planning about what data we make available and how open and accessible that is for everybody. So in other countries, in some other countries, then there is legislation that says that these particular data sets, things like address data, are so important for the economy, so fundamental, that we'll make them open and available for everybody to use and to access and to share for common good, right? We think that there should be some legislation like that for some core data sets. That just means that people know that they're going to be there and know that they can build things on top of them without risk. Second part was around data skills, and this kind of comes to the point that I was making about not just having the skills to manipulate data in a spreadsheet, but also for business leaders and for government leaders to understand how to use it as a tool. So it's not just data science skills that we need to be increasing, but also this basic data literacy. I think that helps, as I say, business leaders and policymakers, but also data literacy for all of us as citizens, so that we know what kinds of choices we make, informed choices when we tick those boxes to say, yes, you can use my data in this way. And then the third aspect that we talk about is innovation. We think that open innovation is the way in which you can really advance at the pace that we need to be advancing, given the pace that tech is advancing. And we've seen with projects like Open Active, which we're involved in, and things like the open banking work, that some investment in building standards and building community can really make a difference to the amount of innovation that you see around particular data in order to achieve some good social policy ends. So we would have liked to see some real strong commitments around infrastructure. And in fact, you didn't bring it out in the summary, but the Conservatives do have a commitment around creating open land data, which we think is really important to tackle our housing crisis, for example. So that's the start of that kind of open data infrastructure. More commitment around skills, but not just seeing it as academic skills and data science skills, more commitment around actually supporting innovation. And then the other parts, as like I say, is how do you build trust? Or how do you not lose trust, which is, I think, more pertinent sometimes.
Yeah, because I feel like we're actually starting from quite a big deficit here.
Yeah.
There's a big hill to climb up.
And it's very, very easy. You only have to do one thing wrong to lose people's trust, whereas gaining it, you have to do a lot right, I think. The three things that we draw out there, I think we've touched on all of them, in fact. So one is around ethics. How do we build ethical thinking into how we're using data? The second one is around equity. So how do we make sure that you don't simply build monopolies by providing access to data? So the DeepMind example that we talked about earlier is one of those. And then the third thing is about engagement. This is what we think is really important, that we are actually having these conversations widely and informed conversations with citizens, right? All people, as well as with academics and as well as with businesses, so that we can... because like I say, this is uncharted territory, and the only way in which we learn is by trying things out and talking to each other and sharing those learnings.
So I guess the key takeaway really is that this isn't party politics at all, is it? And it's more about time to move on now and make use of this data as best we can. So if like...
Hang on. I thought that Jenny's going to tell us who to vote for.
Well, I was just about to say, you know, let's go back to the word trust. Which party can we trust to deliver on this?
That's... I can't make political statements like... That.
Come on.
The people that I trust are the civil servants and the officials who are working on delivering these policies in the best way that they can. And I also trust them to give the best advice that they can to their ministers, whoever those are.
Very good answer. Very good answer.
A vote for technocracy.
Well, you know, Roland, policy is extremely important. I mean, it shouldn't get lost in the noise of an election.
I don't know, though. I think I feel like that... The politics of it all plays into this in such important ways. I guess the underlying question is, do the politicians understand the policies, and are they actually putting their using their political agenda in ways that they even comprehend? But at the same time, I mean, it'll be ultimately politicians that are making these decisions, so we will have to pick.
And like I say, that's why I think that the work of Dot Everyone is really important in trying to reach out to those politicians and educate them to the extent they need to be in order to make sensible decisions around digital and data.
And of course, if you'd like to listen to our interview with the founder of Dot Everyone, Martha Lane Fox, that was our very first upvote. Was that 6 weeks ago?
Many, many, many moons ago. Oh, now, yeah.
I feel like ages.
It really does. Well, the election is 2 days away now. This is going to be our last upvote before the election. We hope you've enjoyed them. If you'd like to get in touch, please do email us at upvote@wired.co.uk. Tell us what you think. Tell us if you've liked this series or not. Anyway, we will see you on the other side. Good luck, everyone, and please do vote. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you, as always, and vote, vote, vote.
Goodbye. Thank you.